Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm John Cook, and I'm joined today by Jordan Heiber from MUFG's Washington, D.C. Representative Office. It's Tuesday, October 13th, 2020. Hi, Jordan. It has been some time since your last podcast. Welcome back.
Thanks, John.
It's been a rough stretch for President Trump, especially considering he was sidelined for a while with coronavirus. Is there a sense that the president can still win this election? And what would it take for him to win?
John, thanks so much for having me back. And thanks for the question. The short answer is that yes, the president can still win, of course, on November 3rd. But it is getting more and more difficult for him to do so. We're now less than 3 weeks out from Election Day. And in fact, as many as 10 million Americans have already voted. And tens of millions more are expected to vote between now and November 3rd. So for months, we've seen a really static race. And to be clear, I don't mean that it's featured the two candidates in a tie. What it really means is that Biden has had a consistent lead nationally between 5 and 8 points and across critical swing states. And in the last couple of weeks, Biden has actually inched upward. As you said, it's been a rough stretch for the president, and he's now leading by about 10 points nationally. So that sort of advantage, if it holds, is leading to bigger swing state advantages that are really going to be tough for Trump to overcome. So when you look at forecasters who make predictions based off these polls, almost without fail, they're increasing their odds of a Biden victory. Betting markets, which have been more bullish on Trump than what the polls have suggested, are also beginning to break for Biden in a bigger way. So to your question, what would it take for Trump to win? I think there are a few things to keep in mind and to sort of keep this all still in perspective. The first is that the polling could be wrong to an extent, especially at the statewide level, and perhaps enough to give Trump a similar path to victory as the one that he took in 2016. Second, I think we have to keep in mind that poll numbers are not the same thing as votes. So what really matters at the end of the day is who actually shows up to vote in person, who actually mails in their ballots. And the president, to be clear, has a really dedicated and motivated base of support. It's really just a question of whether it's going to be big enough this time around. And then third, we should really expect some level of election confusion that could benefit Trump. We just don't know how the pandemic will impact voting on Election Day or how it might impact the way that mailed-in ballots are tallied. And it's going to be vary state by state. So there was a recent study, and it found that if 50% of voters mail in their ballots this year, which is possible, and we could exceed that amount, that there was an expectation that more than 1 million of those ballots could be discarded due to errors. So maybe they weren't signed properly, or maybe they weren't put into secrecy envelopes. So there are a lot of different things that can cause these mailed-in ballots to be discounted. And if it turns out to be 1 million, that could be a huge and really pivotal number. So there's definitely some built-in uncertainty to this election that we really haven't seen before.
Thanks for that. I mean, 2020 is certainly different than 2016, but it certainly feels like we've been down this road before. You know, in 2016, Trump pulled out an unlikely victory. What's the difference this time, and what do you expect on November 3rd?
Yeah, so I do think it's sort of tempting on the surface to say that the 2016 race between Trump and Secretary Clinton bore a lot of similarities to what we're seeing now in 2020. As you sort of pointed out, Clinton generally held a lead in the polls. Forecasters expected her to win, and then Trump pulled it out in the end. But there are some key differences this year. First is that President Trump has trailed in this campaign more consistently and by larger margins to Biden than he did in 2016 to Secretary Clinton. And then to another point, Biden's favorability numbers are positive, I think around 52 or 53%. And this really wasn't the case with Secretary Clinton back in 2016. And then in 2016, you had a really much larger number of undecided voters who kind of waffled between the two candidates. And then as we got closer to Election Day, many of them chose Trump and others maybe chose a third party candidate. And again, the evidence really isn't that that's the case this year. This is a two candidate race, and most voters have made up their minds about who they're supporting. Most of them made up their minds a long time ago. So that pool of swing voters just simply isn't large. And then last, Trump successfully ran as an outsider 4 years ago. You know, he had no experience in Washington. He could criticize government and say it wasn't serving the interest of American voters or the American people. And he's still kind of trying to do that this year, to run against a sort of corrupt or inept Washington establishment. But that's much more difficult to do when you're actually the head of government. So this election has really become a referendum on Trump, and especially his handling of the coronavirus. As for what we can expect on November 3rd, a couple of weeks ago, I thought it was extremely unlikely that we would know the outcome of the presidential race on the night of the election, in large part because of some expected close contests in swing states and the high volume of mail-in votes, many of which will take longer to count. I still think we aren't likely to have a winner that night, but I do think the likelihood is growing that it may not be quite as long until we get clarity, especially if Biden's national lead holds up for the next few weeks. So if you see Biden on November 3rd, leading in states like Florida or Texas, it really gets to be much, much more difficult for Trump to have a path to the presidency. But if it turns out to be a much closer race, obviously it's going to take longer to know who won. And the closer the outcome, the more the campaigns are going to try to spin things in their favor. And the more confusing and chaotic things are likely to be, at least until we get resolution. And then one other thing to point out is, regardless of the presidential election outcome, we just need to keep in mind that there are a lot of lower ticket races, whether Senate, House, governor, local races, and some of these will also be very close, and they could also take longer to decide.
Okay, so I think that's interesting. There certainly do seem to be some significant differences between 2020 and 2016. And as you point out, it may take some time, but we will get an outcome to the presidential and these congressional races. Looking forward a little bit, what should investors expect in January 2021 when the new president and the Congress are seated?
So I'll start with the simplest outcome, in that it generally reflects the current status quo. And that's that Trump ekes out a victory next month, but doesn't have control, Republican control, of at least one chamber of Congress. So for the most part, I think this means we get more of what we've seen the last 2 years. So you'll get some cooperation on the COVID response, and you'll perhaps have a few other areas of smaller compromise between Trump and Congress, if one or both houses are controlled by Democrats. If Democrats carry the House and the Senate, maybe you get more of an opening for major spending on an infrastructure package, but that's probably a longer way off and would still be a heavy lift in its second Trump term. But you also get much more oversight of the Trump administration by Congress, and that really means, to me, much more political gridlock. The other main scenario, which based on current polling looks much more likely, is a Democratic sweep of the presidency and Congress. And that's where you get the biggest changes to policy and where I want to focus on a little bit. So first things first, I think Biden and the Democrats will prioritize their pandemic response above all else, which likely means a large stimulus bill right out of the gate next year. Estimates are that we could see a bill in January, maybe early February, in the trillions of dollars. And the size would really depend on a few factors. What stimulus, if any, gets passed between now and 2021. Where are we in terms of the pandemic's health and economic impact? Do we have a vaccine? How many Senate Republicans will get on board for more spending? But that's really the first priority. And then I think we get to some other priorities, and these could be maybe divided into a few categories. One is unwinding the Trump agenda. So this includes things like rejoining the Paris Climate Accords, rejoining the World Health Organization, undoing Trump's changes to immigration policy, really an attempt by Biden and Democrats to reverse what Trump has put in place the last 4 years. And then the second category is democracy reform, which is broadly expanding access to voting, safeguarding US elections from interference, and increasing election transparency. So it's really an attempt at putting laws in place that prevent a presidency like Trump's from occurring again. And then you have economic reform. And that's things like raising the minimum wage, unwinding in part the Trump tax cuts, creating more economic opportunity for minorities and disenfranchised people, also expanding healthcare access. So it would be a really big agenda, but it would also be challenged. Democrats won't be able to do all of these things. So they're going to have to figure out how to get along with each other, you know, their progressive and moderate wings, and prioritize what is most important to them and to voters. And they're likely to face some pretty united opposition from Republicans. So this would certainly limit what Democrats can do and could tempt them to take more drastic or dramatic action like eliminating the filibuster. And then in terms of markets, I reached out to our global markets research colleagues earlier, and they note that financial markets are growing more confident about a Biden victory, really for all the reasons that I've outlined above. And the clean sweep scenario that would give us this best chance of sizable fiscal stimulus in 2021, means support for equities and a weakening of the US dollar. One word of caution from them is that if we see Trump close the gap over the next few weeks, there would be repercussions for markets most likely and added dollar volatility going into November 3rd.
That's great analysis, Jordan. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.